And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, March the 9th, 2017, 1:13 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Scott Spears along with you here for the ride. And this hour we're going to remember a guy I liked a whole lot. He was on this program several times. Legendary boxing trainer Lou Duva, kind of the Yogi Berra of the boxing world, I always felt when he was on and would interview with me and just come up with all kinds of funny things to say. Lou was an original, without question, and did things that nobody else did, which I guess is what made him legendary. Sadly, he passed away yesterday at the age of 94, but a good long life. Joining us today to remember him is another one of my favorite people, one of my favorite guests of all time, former HBO boxing analyst Larry Merchant. But before we get to Larry, I want to go back to an interview we did with Lou just a couple years ago, 2015, when I asked Lou about what kind of fighter he was. Lou fought, if you don't know. Lou, when you got in the ring, when you were actually boxing, what kind of fighter were you?
Well, I went in there, and roughed the guy up to win the fight. If I had to pick up a stool and hit him over the head, I did that too. You know, but we had a good fight that I was in one time. I worked the corner of Roddy Piper as a wrestler against Mr. T, a former boxer, and he had in his corner Joe Frazier, and they had in my corner me, George Andrews, and we had a heck of a thing going out there, and the thing busted out in the riot, and it all worked out well. But we had a lot of fun, and the fans got a real good show that night, and they wanted us to come back and do it again. And we did it again.
Apparently, if you got in the ring with Lou, watch out for stools. Of course, we bring in to remember the great Lou Duva, Larry Merchant. Larry, how are you?
Hey, Scott. Good. How you doing?
Good. Good to talk with you.
Well, I guess my first thought is the old saying that they're shooting at our regiment. You know, we've lost Angelo Dundee, Gil Clancy, great trainers of the past, and guys who were great raconteurs and who represented the era when prize fighting was a mainstream sport.
You know, Larry, something about Lou Duva that was always interesting to me and why I liked having him on the show. I could not name a boxing trainer today if I tried. But Lou Duva was colorful. He was animated. There's no Lou Duvas today, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, there are guys around. I mean, Freddie Roach is probably the best-known trainer. But there are a lot of good trainers around. But because boxing is not, again, the mainstream sport, a serious part of our popular culture anymore, they aren't well known. There are a number of them who are colorful characters and who are widely known within the boxing world, but the boxing world, the tectonic plates of the boxing world have shifted, and just as once upon a time everyone knew who the top jockeys were, for example, when horse racing was mainstream not just when they had the Triple Crown races. So, you know, things change over time, and Lou Duva went through a lot of the different ages of boxing and the different aspects of boxing, from being a young fighter and putting on local uh, fight fights, and then ESPN came along, and so they had a steady gig doing more fights, and then they did bigger fights and had bigger fighters, notably the great 1984 Olympic team with Meldrick Taylor and Evander Holyfield and Pernell Whitaker, fighters that they developed into stars in boxing. So, you know, Lou had a long and varied career, and his daughter-in-law, Kathy Duva, the wife of his son who died at an early age, carries on the main event flag right to this day.
Larry, because you talk about Lou spanning a great era, he knew Rocky Marciano, had one of the last conversations with him before he tragically died in the plane crash. But Lou even went back to minstrel shows. And at one point, we talked about his work as a clown in a minstrel show. I want to play that clip because I find it very interesting. This is Lou Duva from 2 years ago here on the program. Lou Duva. Lou, I also read somewhere that you at one point performed as a clown in a ministry. Is that true?
That's right. That was the Riverside Vets, a minstrel show. We used to have minstrel shows every year, and the money used to go, all the money used to go, we made on it at School 18. We used to run it, Riverside Vets. It was all veterans, the Riverside section of Patterson. And all the money we made used to go to help people. If we knew people were down out that didn't have a job or were destitute in one way or another, we were there to help them out.
What?
And it gave you an incentive, really, in life that you were doing some good.
Did you have a name as a clown?
As a clown?
Yeah. Did they give you a special name?
I was a clown in a minstrel show, make up a costume, then paint your face up like a clown, and we just had a lot of fun.
Did you ever give any thought to working in the minstrel show back in those days? When you look back on that, what do you think about?
Well, yeah, I thought about working on it because I loved what I was doing. I loved the people I was with. Lou Cuccinello, Yalo Gonzalo, those kind of people. I would hang out with Larry Doby. First black baseball player. All those kind of people. They were my friends. They were my second family.
You know, Larry, to me, that clip is very telling because if you say minstrel show today, you couldn't do it and it wouldn't be well interpreted at all. But Lou loved these people. It was just of his time.
Yeah, he was a part of a lot of different times and eras, as you suggest. And he was just good people, and he was the kind of colorful character that made a lot of made a lot of boxing people a little bit more human, almost than other people. It was every man for himself, showing the best parts of himself and sometimes the worst parts of themselves, and not being ashamed of showing any part of themselves, and being, you know, kind of the sons and grandsons of immigrants, and who literally fought their way up and out and over. And in his case, he became a kind of star in his advanced years. And, you know, some people called him the Yogi Berra of of boxing because of a kind of a faint resemblance, and because they were both the sons of Italian immigrants from early in the 20th century, and they were a part of our culture. I met Marciano, and the first time I met Duva, and I didn't even know who Duva was way back in the day in 1963 at a championship fight he was involved with as a promoter, I think, but I'm not sure, Joey Giardello and Dick Tiger. And I, you know, met many people in boxing who were variations of Lou Duva and his story in the, from the early to the end of the 20th century.
You know, Larry, what always struck me about Lou was, because he was funny and he was outspoken, I thought, well, this can't be a great businessman. But he was. I mean, he was very smart in promotion. He was very, obviously knew how to train fighters. How much do you think of what Lou Duva did on camera and in interviews was a show? Or was it all part of his personality?
No, I think it was a part of his personality. There was no, he wasn't in disguise at all. He was very happy in his own skin. He had been doing what he loved to all of his life. And there's nothing better than that. And so he was a genuine article. What you saw is what you get, and what you get is something real.
When I look back on Lou, speaking of that realism, one time we were going down fighters' names, and I was just asking him what he thought of certain fighters. Matter of fact, I wonder if we have that clip, because I think that's an important clip. I want to go back to this here, Lou Duva from 2 years ago commenting on fighters that he had seen in his day. And I think this is a very telling clip. Here's Lou Duva. Let's go to that clip in his own words.
Ooh, I want to run down some famous people in the boxing industry, and I want you to give me your thoughts on them. And I want to start with Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, Holyfield, a gentleman, he would always help out his family, help out other fighters. He was a gentleman, and when it came to boxing, he was in that ring, and he threw everything at you.
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali was a guy that could do anything, and he was one of the best fighters around.
James Buster Douglas.
Buster Douglas was a big, fat guy, and we got lucky. We knocked him out. And then always, you know, and as a result of that, we get the Mike Tyson fight, and we knocked him out.
What kind of guy was Mike Tyson?
Mike, to me, was a gentleman all the time. I mean, we got along good. And we called everything the way we saw it.
When he bit Evander Holyfield's ear, what did you think about that?
What did I think of it?
Yeah, when that happened, that was an odd thing.
Yeah. And then it was a good thing we were up there to win the fight. As a result of that, I had a total bet in Las Vegas, and I won a lot of money. And I took 19 of my kids and my family over to Europe, over to Italy, on an 8-day trip, and all as a result of Evander winning that fight.
You know, Larry, obviously did not care for Buster Douglas, but the only person apparently who benefited from Evander Holyfield losing his ear was Lou Duva and his family during that time.
Well, I never heard that story, But he came from a big family, and I guess he found a lot of them to take take over with his winnings. What he was talking about with Douglas was after Douglas upset Tyson in what was supposed to be a tune-up fight for Tyson to fight Holyfield, Holyfield fought Douglas instead, and Douglas was way out of shape, and he beat him. And so that was, you know, he had the heavyweight champion of the world. And that made his world a lot bigger than it had ever been before. And Holyfield was a great fighter. And to have him as the centerpiece of his stable made main events and Lou Duva a national figure.
Do you have a favorite encounter or memory or story that somebody told you about Lou Duva in your career?
I can't say off the top of my white-haired head that I have something that stands out. You know, I have fond memories of being around Lou, and that if there was a fight involving main events or involving a Lou Duva fighter, having Lou around just gave the event a smile, and he had a kind of passion for the game and seemed to represent the game as it was. And as I said earlier, they're shooting at our regiment, and there are not many trainers around or boxing figures around, for that matter, the way Duva was as a part of the national scenery at the time.
You know, when I look back on Lou Duva, Larry, and I think about it when I hear these clips, you know, he did not mind getting involved with professional wrestling. He did not mind being different, stepping out of the box, being a clown in a minstrel show. Lou Duva, you know, people knew him. He made a lot of money. But I think he was always Lou Duva from poverty, where he came from. I don't think that ever left him. He was always having fun.
I think, you know, I think that's the truth of the matter. And he found his bliss. It was a hard way to make a hard dollar for him. And he just stuck with it and brought his family along with it. And you know, suddenly they all prospered and became stars in the business of boxing, and who, just looking at them and with his body language and the way he rooted for his fighters and without any artifice, just being who he was, made him and boxing, for me anyway, being worth the time and being a part of that scene.
Larry, before I let you go, I just have one more question, and I want you to think on it for a moment. Is how would you, if you were giving Lou's eulogy or writing a newspaper column to sum up Lou Duva's 94 years and I think over 70 in the boxing industry, how would you do it? But while you think on that, I do want to play the clip, because we did ask Lou when he was on, when he was 92 years old 2 years ago, how he'd like to be remembered, and this is what he said. Lou Duva.
100 years from now, Lou, when people look back on your career, how do you want them to remember you? What do you think the epitaph will read?
Just what I think you labeled me for a minute. I did everything in boxing. And I did it right. It was my life. It was my life against the rest of the world, I guess.
Boxing was his life. Larry, how would you remember Lou Duva?
Boxing was his life. His life was boxing. And his loss, in a way, is boxing's gain, in the sense that he was such a vivid, colorful, real character that it reflects on what the game can be at its best.
Absolutely. Larry Merchant, former HBO boxing analyst and good friend of this show, good friend of mine. Larry, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope we do it again soon.
Okay, Scott. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Lou Duva, one of the all-time greats. Terry Tackett now comes into the show here. Terry, your memories of Lou Duva.
Well, the thing that sticks out with me is the Roddy Piper. was it WrestleMania 2 or 3 when he was
I think both of them.
Both of them,
I think he did 2 and 3.
Okay, yeah, he was the of Roddy Piper. And just, like you said, just stepping outside of the boxing world, you know, just to see him in the wrestling world was... He was still Lou Duva, but he was such a character. You know what I mean?
Well, he was about 5'5",
uh-huh.
Weighed probably about 350, had this streak of white hair,
uh-huh.
And he talked, you know, and he would say, he was a little mushy mouth,
uh-huh.
But he was hilarious.
Yeah.
He was absolutely...
The things that he would say would just... Oh.
To me, that's why he was the Yogi Berra of the boxing industry.
Yeah.
I loved Lou Duva. Loved Lou Duva. He was fun and funny and interesting and entertaining, and may he rest well.
Absolutely.
And how many people go from the days of Rocky Marciano to Evander Holyfield and are still so active in the sport, from minstrel shows to boxing with Roddy Piper? I mean, nobody spanned the career that Lou Duva did.
But what was nice is that he always remembered where he came from. You know, he was...
I don't think he ever took anything seriously.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever did. I think it was a job for him, and he was having a good
Absolutely.
Time.
And he took care of his family, and, you know.
He's the only person, as I said, who benefited from Evander Holyfield getting his hair bent off by Mike Tyson.
Took 19 of them to Italy? Is that what he said?
Yeah, he did. He did well. Are we getting a call on the line there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's take it.
I'll take it off the air.
Oh, it's an off-the-air call? Okay. Well, we are going to continue on here on WWGH Radio, having a good time, without question, remembering some of the greatest people in boxing history, which Lou Duva certainly was. I tell you what, the toll-free line is up and running, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And again, we do want to thank Doug Weed for coming on the program earlier on. Author of Game of Thorns, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy. Very, very interesting. We're going to take a quick break, come back with you on the toll-free line, 740-389-9944, right after this. Don't you dare go anywhere. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 1210 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains needing people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess...
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
But?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean. because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944, streaming live on net at www.wwgh1071.com. Hey, we're back here at WWGH Radio, 39 minutes past the hour. Terry Tackett, we remembered Lou Duva there, so let's get back to the Game of Thorns. You got to sit and hear that whole interview with Doug Weed. What do you make about the election take?
I think it was definitely... It was definitely a conservative's viewpoint.
Now, why do you think it was conservative more than anything else?
I mean, take for example what he said about I'm not sure the name of the hotel, but the hotel he was talking about, where he said she was, you know, the governor said she was smashing bottles and things. Now, I'm sure she's upset, and there's no doubt she's probably crying because she just lost. But to with all those people in there to be smashing bottles or what, I find that a little hard to, you know.
So you don't think Hillary smashing bottles?
Well, I just, it seems a little far-fetched. Then the one part where he said, I can't remember the guy's name again, excuse me, I just can't think of his name. One of the guys said he had bags of money, and they go up into the FBI, arrest him again, and he's in the middle of the streets, and I just find that a little hard to believe. And then nobody would take Barack Obama's call when he's calling, you know, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, the headquarters of the Clinton campaign.
I just find that a little weird. I mean, you know, that...
But what do you think, listening audience? If you were listening to the Game of Thorns interview, what'd you make of it? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Or if you have a comment on anything else going on in the world or a memory of Lou Duva, we'd love to hear from you. 740-383-9944. Just give us a ring and we'll get you up on the air. See, what I don't understand, when the undertitle of the book is the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy, doesn't that kind of give it away?
Yeah. Well, obviously, 80% of it was Donald Trump's winning.
Did you buy how everything went?
Well, the part two, and I was going to ask you about this, and I didn't really understand it. Maybe you could give me some clarification, was the evangelical part. I didn't really kind of understand.
Well, apparently Barack Obama thought that she could get more of the evangelical vote than she was getting, but she didn't. Speak on
she
it.
Didn't ask
I don't
for the
know.
Vote they said or something. Or I didn't quite understand that part. But then the other part was when he seen the lady on TV and he was so fascinated with it, he flew her in and kind of had her walk him through the evangelical community, so to speak. And you know, and
it's interesting. But apparently, the night of the Access Hollywood tape, he about threw it in.
Oh, that's.
I thought that was interesting.
That was very.
Do you think it's true though?
Sure. I don't know. And then Melania not wanting him to do it. And you know.
There are a lot of footnotes in this book.
What did he say, 798?
Yeah, there's a bunch of footnotes. The book's 300, I think he said, in 41 pages.
Wow.
Maybe. No,
so
no.
460.
See, with the footnotes.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah,
I got
so
you,
I was.
I got you.
It's over 300 without them.
Yeah. If you did read it in one night, man, that's incredible.
Ran through it. Woo. Had to get ready.
He was on Rand Paul's campaign. Is that right?
He helped run Rand Paul's campaign, was my understanding.
I mean, some of the views on that were a little scared, definitely. I mean, but some of them, I mean, it's not to say that the book wasn't informative, but it was definitely some...
interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And we like all perspectives here.
I do. I mean...
You know, that was a horrible book to have on the Hillary Clinton Network here. That's not going to score
How
us.
How dare
any
you? Yeah.
I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
I must have missed the meeting beforehand.
That's right.
You're
going to get schooled. For that,
well,
you know?
You know, the meeting where we go over and we say, well, how can we progress Hillary Clinton? See, it's that liberal media garbage again. There is no... I hate to tell Mr. Doug Weed, but if there is a liberal media bias, why are you on?
Exactly.
Why would anybody have you on?
Right. That's...
I mean, it's insane.
Well, I think it's a made-up liberal media bias, I think. That's
you know, he was going to have somebody to fight.
Yeah, yeah, they're always looking for a fight.
But I'll tell you what's not a liberal media bias is healthcare in this country right now, because it doesn't look like they're going to get the votes for this. These people are not very happy. And by the way, don't forget Representative Jim Jordan on this show tomorrow morning, Friday morning, March the 10th at 10:30 a.m. You're not going to want to miss that. Healthcare's the topic.
You may become a Lou Duva in that interview.
You never
you might
know.
You might need a corner man.
Well, you know, I'm just going to ask him questions because I want to know if he's going to vote for this bill.
Right.
Because apparently the Republicans are not happy.
Hmm.
Why aren't they happy in your opinion? Too much? Too little?
I think there's just some things in there that they're not happy with. I mean, I think they're going to keep the pre-existing conditions right and the 26-year-old still being on the...
I think they're in a catch-22, though, because this bill repeals Obamacare and replaces it with something else. Well, here is the problem. If you're a Republican and you don't like the bill... Then you're voting not to repeal.
Right, yeah.
Which was their promise.
But you don't have a replacement, right? So that's, yeah.
But a lot of See, why didn't all the Republicans get together with this? Why did only a few people come up with this plan? Why didn't they get them all in a room and say, this is what I'll accept, this is what I won't accept, and go from there?
Because I think you alluded to this earlier, correct me if I'm wrong, but remember when you said how... Some of them said that they don't want to be blamed for, you know, like you voted for, you know. I think it's kind of that mentality. They didn't want to be associated, even though maybe they didn't agree with it. They don't want to be associated with.
It very well could be, but if it is, how do you turn that around?
Yeah, oh, that's going to be the tough part because you can't go back and get those votes back once they, you know, once it's voted. What I'm saying is once they vote to repeal it, you can't undo it, I guess.
I guess that is the case.
You know. But now with no replacement, oh, man, this could be.
Well, will they ever repeal it? See, that's another question I want to ask Representative Jordan tomorrow. Will you repeal Obamacare if you don't have a replacement?
Right.
Because you can't seem to get together on a replacement here.
But it seems to me like they're headstrong about replacing it no matter what. I mean, they're going.
But if you can't get the votes,
right? That's
you
well,
can't get the votes.
Yeah, I mean, how are they going to sway these? Well, I know he tried to scare tactics. It said something about when they won't get reelected or something like that. But
well, that could be.
And then I see the Dispatch or something today or the Marion Star where it said their new policy could affect the lower income people in Ohio.
Well, yeah, the Medicaid.
Yeah, that's what they were talking about.
There's a continuation of Medicaid expansion for a little bit. I think it's 2 years, but then. It's back to where we were before.
Oh, my. That could.
I don't know. I just, if they can't get together, are they just going to have to live with Obamacare? Care because him. I don't think they'll ever repeal it if they can't get a replacement.
Really? Yeah. Now can he executive, you know, make like an executive and repeal it? He can't repeal it himself. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
That's what I was wondering.
Not a bill. He can make executive orders, but he cannot. It would be very hard for him to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know if he's going to get the support he needs, you know, to...
But is he going to blame the Congress?
Well, I'm sure he'll tweet out something, you know, the Congress or Senate or something. He'll blame for not getting it passed.
Well, is this better than Obamacare? Because they call it Obamacare Light.
Right.
So why don't they go for that if they're so...
Well,
not happy with Obamacare?
Right. Because I don't think that they have a better plan.
Now, we had a call the other day as we were going off the air. Do you remember what the call was about? About President Obama left office worse than George W. Bush?
Oh, yeah.
You never got to speak on that. Go ahead.
Well, I remember when he left office, I want to say, I don't know the exact number, so I'm not going to, but I'm thinking unemployment was around 8%, and the housing market was in disarray and all kinds of stuff, and... Now I know when President Obama leaves is the unemployment rate was at not all time lowest but pretty low since 2008 maybe
long
six,
time
eight, yeah
long time
you know it seems
so
like
why,
seems like people
but the numbers were fudged
Yeah, it's
that's what the color is.
Which I don't understand. I mean, I guess they could be fudged, but I don't understand how.
Is this where we are really from now on? If you are a Republican or you tend to believe Republican philosophies, then anything contrary is just wrong.
It's
fudged and made
up. You're the enemy.
Same thing, Democrats. If Democrats don't like what Republicans say, sure, then they just made it up.
Yep, that's, you know, it's fake news. Or
is that it? I mean, because we're not going to get anywhere in this country.
I hope that's not the path that we're heading down, but it seems like, you know.
I mean, you can forget about ever agreeing on anything or getting any legislation through if that's our new philosophy
in
life.
Right. Well, and I would think that making America, but it wouldn't mean that we're going to work together to try to pass, you know, laws and bills and things that make sense for the citizens of the U.S. and make their lives a lot better. But it seems like every time, you know, we get these roadblocks thrown up, like, you know, like with this Obamacare, you take it. I mean, is it the greatest thing in the world? No. But, you know, let's all get together and see if we can work together and try to come up with something instead of just automatically repeal it just because you don't like it. I mean, without having a replacement.
Is anybody ever going to come through with a replacement?
Boy, it's going to be tough, man. I mean, it's...
That everybody can get together.
Right. That's the thing.
Because the Democrats hate it. Democrats think Sherrod Brown said you're sticking it to the poor people.
Sure. I mean,
so no Democrat's going to vote for it.
Exactly.
Why can't health care cannot be this difficult?
How can other countries figure it out, but we can't?
Because we have this polarized society. Why, you know.
Do they get a lot of money from the pharmaceutical industry? Is that what.
Is it impossible for a Republican to agree with a Democratic statute? Is it impossible for a Democrat to agree with a Republican statute? What is the problem here?
I think you just hit the nail right on the head. I just think those two, they don't want to come together for some reason. I mean,
they have to agree on something.
Something, yeah. I mean, because in the meantime, we're the ones suffering for it.
Well, yeah, but who do you blame?
Right. I mean,
do you blame the party that's trying to preserve something? Do you blame the party that's trying to change something?
Yeah.
Did you feel when... Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Did you feel you were in bad shape when Bill Clinton left office?
I didn't.
Did you feel you were in bad shape when George W. Bush left office?
I did.
Did you feel you were in bad shape a month ago when Barack Obama left office?
Yeah.
You did. Based on what?
Based on the past performances, you know, of the economy and just the direction that the country was going in, I just felt that we were a little bit more united, I guess, you know, with the.
But I'm saying, what were the differences when George W. Bush left and when President Obama left?
The only example I can cite for that is I could tell you this. My dad had 14 rental properties and he bought them during the Clinton era. And, you know, he never had a problem, you know, with him at that point. The minute that George W. Bush gets elected, you know, he basically had to sell him.
Now, why was that?
Because he, you know, everybody was out of work, you know, he couldn't, everybody was out of work, nobody could, you know, could rent him. And
so how does that reflect on the Obama presidency, though?
Well, but basically what I'm leading to, and then the Obama presidency was, I characterize it a lot like the Clinton presidency, as far as I see. Now, what he done in the housing industry, he kind of stabilized that. You know, I'm a prime example of that.
Why do you think Barack Obama will ever get a fair shake?
I don't think so, but boy, he definitely deserves it. I mean, he did a lot of great things. I mean,
he was no drama Obama.
No,
there's no scandal there.
Right? That's
unless you believe the wiretapping.
Sure,
thing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a little far fetched for me to believe, but I don't know.
So, do you think that? I guess. Do you think he hurt the country in any way, President Obama?
I don't see how he could have, but a lot of people think he did because they called, you know, I mean, I don't want to use the term that they said, but they called him, you know, the president that catered to the, like the food card and stuff.
Well, you can say that. That's not a...
Yeah, I know, but they called him the welfare president, you know, and things like that.
Now,
and,
do you think that had overtones in anything?
if you read between the lines, I'm sure there's some there's a meaning there.
Do you think, now that it's over, do you think there was racism involved in that presidency?
Oh, yeah.
Because to me, that's when things fell apart.
Definitely.
All of a sudden, the Democrats and the Republicans could get together on nothing.
Yeah.
But you know what? I understand it now, because if you get along, if you do something with the other party, they beat you above the head and shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you remember when Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq? Well, who wanted to go to Iraq? George W. Bush.
Yeah.
So some Democrats voted for her. Okay. Well, boy, they just beat her above the head and shoulders with that for years and years.
Yeah.
She should have just voted party line.
Yeah.
I mean, at least you never get blamed.
It just seemed like everything that happened like that was, you know, if you didn't go along with, you know, you were basically treated that way.
I just don't understand. And I'm still not sure what's wrong with taking money from Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Bernie's big thing. Don't take any money from Wall Street.
Was he? Do you think that they were going to influence you somehow?
I guess, but yeah. I mean, don't all people who give you money in some way influence you?
Sure.
All companies?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it starts from a local level even.
740-383-9944 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. 740-383-9944. I think just sometimes we really get off the beam. Because when somebody says that the president, that Barack Obama left the country in worse shape than George W. Bush, mm-hmm. I don't know what you're looking at.
Right. I'm trying to look at the big picture, what he did. You know, I mean, he took a chance with this affordable health care. You know, he you know, with the gay marriage thing and, you know, and
changed the country.
Yeah. You know.
And now what will Donald Trump do? I mean, do you remember back in the Obama presidency, a lot of people saying, well, give him a chance.
Yeah.
Give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Hey, caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Scott and Terry. This is Sean. How are you?
What's going on?
Good. Not too bad. Hey, yesterday I was at work. I'm going to tell you guys a little story. I saw online that Donald Trump is going to crash the stock market. So I told this guy, he's a really Republican, and I emailed him, and I said, hey, I showed him a picture of it, you know, and I said, hey, Donald Trump's going to crash the stock market. He wrote back, he goes, I'm going to buy you a set of luggage, and you and Whoopi Goldberg can move to Canada.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so there you go. He said he always called me the old lefty.
you'll be in the Canadian Parliament up there.
Yeah.
Well, what's your take on Donald Trump this week?
Well, I think he'd be a little bit calmer. I think. Hopefully, he gets straightened up a little bit, because you know we need a good president in there that we can trust. And
do you think Barack Obama left the country worse than George W. Bush?
Well, the numbers were. Not on his favorite, but you know, he'd done a lot of good things that he was in office. I don't think he made it worse. As far as I'm concerned, George W. Bush was the worst president, I think.
I
can't stand that man.
I got one question for you, Sean. I mean,
yeah,
I know one program that he implemented was the first time home buyer thing. What do you think? That, you know, Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
We don't have to have any money down to get a house. I mean, I think that's a pretty good.
Yeah, that was a pretty good deal.
What numbers were you alluding to that were worse for President Obama?
Yeah,
the unemployment rate was down.
Well, I mean, wasn't his when he left office his numbers were a lot lower than
his approval rating or his approval rating? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, his approval rating. Yeah.
No, they were about double what President Bush's were.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about, I said President Bush is the worst.
Right, no, but the question I asked you was, who left office better, President Obama or President Bush?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Oh, no, definitely President Obama. I mean, I hate to say this again, but as far as I know, the only president...
No, don't.
President Bush. I mean, I'm sorry, but...
Now, what does that have to do with the history of the United States?
I didn't hear the end of that.
It's the... Go ahead and say it again.
I put President Bush in the same category as Kasich.
as Kasich. Okay. Oh,
well, I'm not sure that Kasich's in a bad category.
Exactly.
Is he?
What's the connection there? I'm trying to figure.
I can't see it. I cannot see Kasich. I can't wait till he is not our government anymore. Governor.
Two more years, man.
You got 2 years, and he'll be gone.
I know.
Then
I
you can run. Then you can run, Sean.
I'm telling you.
I like your platform you said the other day you were going to run.
Yeah, running for president 2020?
Yeah.
Yes, I think everybody should have
the same health care
insurance as the president of the United States.
But the thing is, where are we going to get the money from? That's the question.
You know what? I can't wait.
We'll borrow it from China.
Yeah, but I can't wait till you run for president and Donald Trump starts tweeting on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my word.
He'll call me a fat pig.
He'll say you're like Rosie.
Oh, it'll get ugly.
Oh, man.
Skinhead. It'll be skinhead and everything
else.
Yeah,
it will.
Exactly.
You got to watch out. Well, thanks for calling in.
See you, John.
Bye-bye.
Be careful.
Yep. Bye.
And again, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a call. We've got 2 minutes left, but we thank everybody for calling in today. We thank the Game of Thrones author Doug Weed. We thank Larry Merchant from HBO Boxing.
Always great.
Talking about Lou Duva. And the telephone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. What do you think? We could use another one of those calls about how people are wrong and how people are right, you know, like we got yesterday.
Yeah, those people, nobody's out there today.
No, everybody's out in the weeds. Remember tomorrow, Jim Jordan, Representative Jim Jordan, 10:30 a.m., and we're
going
to talk health care.
You're going toe-to-toe
with
you.
Solve this matter tomorrow at 10:30 a.m.
Nose-to-nose and toes-to-toes.
On this station, and we're going to find out if he's going to vote. That's all I want to know.
Yeah, I know.
Are you going to vote for
it? The $1 million, are you going to lead off with that question?
Well, I'll probably ask him how his day is.
Yeah.
You don't go directly into that.
How you doing? How's the kids?
How's your day? I like the guy in general. I mean, he's never done anything
to me.
Me
too, but he eludes the question. I mean,
Well, he wants to elude. He'll get his chance tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess.
We can get one call in if you want to call in real quick, 740-383-9944. But don't forget, Representative Jim Jordan tomorrow here on the station at 10:30 a.m., a special edition of the Now program. Special. Because we're talking health care in the country. But for Terry Tackett, this is Scott Spears. For this day, heading for the dugout, stay tuned for much more programming here on WWGH Radio.
She fired you.
Yeah, she told me she was not renewing my contract. You know, I spilled the beans inadvertently about Roe v.